Hi there, Workplace Warriors. I'm Dave Lorenzo. You've only got 60 seconds to make a first impression, and I've got half that time to convince you to come with me to the place to be. It's the place you know that will make your wallet grow. It is the 60-second sales show. Welcome, everyone, to the 60-Second Sales Show. I'm your host, Dave Lorenzo, and today we've got something really special for you. Today we have an inside look at how to sell in a regulated industry. I know many of you out there are concerned because we've been helping you develop relationships. We've been helping you build and grow your book of business, and you're focused on developing relationships, but you tell me, I hear all the time, I get emails, I get phone calls, I get text messages, I get shout outs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Dave, look, this is all great, and I have great relationships with my buyers, but I'm in a regulated industry. I have no choice. I have to answer an RFP. What do I do? Well, I heard you, and we're answering that today. I have the best expert on the planet, or at least the best expert I could find, to answer this for you. My good friend, Layla Chang, she's the CEO of Florida Dental Benefits. She's out there right now. Her staff, she's out there pounding the pavement. Her staff, her sales team, they're out there pounding the pavement every day looking to help the toothless population of Florida. And she's going to teach us how to sell in a regulated industry. At least she's going to give us some insight. She's going to give us a window into how you can break through if you have to follow an RFP process, or if you're in a competitive industry, or if you're in an industry that is ridiculously overregulated. This is the show for you. Now, I don't want you to tune out if you're not in a regulated industry, because we've got all sorts of great stuff for you today. We're going to talk about the experience you provide to your clients. We're going to talk about that right now. But before I get into that, I'd be remiss if I didn't welcome in my partner in crime, the person who makes all this happen, the wonderful, the talented producer of this show, Nancy Pop. Hello, Nancy. How are you today?
Hello, Dave. I am just now getting out of bed from Thanksgiving. How about you?
I am. You know, it's funny. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are, they're going to listen to this show probably 7 days from now or even into the future, and they're going to be like, Thanksgiving, what are you talking about? It's sunny. I'm at the beach. I'm listening to this podcast. And that's fine. But as we're recording this show today, it's 1 week, 1 week from Thanksgiving. Seven full days. It'll be seven full days tomorrow. And, you know, I didn't really have the tryptophan coma this year. I did fry the turkey. If you listen to last week's show, we had my friend Enrique Fernandez on the show last week. And in addition to being an expert on developing systems, he also gave us some thoughts on how to fry a turkey. And his insight was really, really good. I used a couple of his tips and I fried my own turkey on Thanksgiving. I think it came out pretty well. I'm going to do another one next week. We have another group of people. As many of you know, those of you who've been listeners for a while, we here in the Lorenzo house have a bed and breakfast that opens a couple of days before Thanksgiving and it closes a couple of weeks after Thanksgiving. We have people just rolling in, rolling out. My wife's family, mostly. Last week it was my family. And so we cook extravagant meals from week to week. Next week I'm going to do another turkey, and I'm going to use what I learned in my Thanksgiving turkey fry, and I'm going to make the turkey even better. Those of you who missed it, you didn't catch the turkey that I fried, you can go to Instagram, at the Dave Lorenzo on Instagram, and check out me pulling the beautiful, they say it was a 25-pound turkey. I think it cooked a little faster than that. I think it was probably more like 20 pounds. Maybe it was 25 pounds with all the guts inside before we took them out. But it's a beautiful 20-pound bird. You can go look at it on Instagram. You can marvel at my capability as a fry cook. It worked out very, very well. My house didn't burn down, and everybody had a good time. So that was great. Let's talk about experience, the experience that you provide now. As an entrepreneur, as a business leader, as a sales professional, there's three things we provide our customers, right? We can provide our customers with a product. We can provide our customers with a service. We can provide our customers with an experience. Some of us provide all three. Some of us just provide a service and the experience. Some of us just provide a product and an experience. But what we always forget about is the experience. And my friends, This is where your competitive advantage really lies. So you as a sales professional can create a competitive advantage with the experience you provide. Let me give you an example. So Nancy traveled to Erie, Pennsylvania for her Thanksgiving, and I'm sure that was a fantastic trip. How was your trip to Erie, Nancy?
One speeding ticket later, I'm safe and sound back in New York, and that's all I have to say about that.
Oh, speeding ticket. New York State speeding ticket or a Pennsylvania speeding ticket? Oh, Pennsylvania. Wow.
Because now I have to go all the way back to go to court if I do that.
Well, you could just plead guilty. How fast were you going?
I was just going 80 on a 70-mile-per-hour highway, and it wasn't even hailing yet.
Well, you know, here's the thing. If you – how much is the fine?
$150.
Don't go.
Not that bad.
Don't go. Save up. Save up. Pay the $150. A trip to – where was the ticket? What was the township of the ticket?
I was somewhere in central Pennsylvania, like in the boondocks somewhere.
Okay. Yeah, it's not worth it. It's not. Yeah. Save up your money and just send in the $150 and be done with it. It's not worth a trip. I mean, you'll plead it down and maybe you'll pay, what are you going to pay? $75 plus court costs. You're going to save yourself probably $50. And to drive to central Pennsylvania,
it's going to cost me.
I love Pennsylvania, but the drive through Pennsylvania in the wintertime is not worth, to me, it's not worth $150.
Exactly.
So I had an experience over Thanksgiving. I was my family was here. We were having a great time. My son's birthday is a couple of days before Thanksgiving. It's between Thanksgiving and my son's birthday, and we're all sitting around the table reminiscing. And my father gets a phone call, and unfortunately, my uncle passed away. So we ended up having to fly out. My mother and my father and I. My parents were going to stay an extra week. We ended up having to fly out. Back to New York. They had to fly back to New York. I had to fly up with them for the services and to pay our respects and to comfort some family members. And for me, it was going to be a quick trip because we had a ton of people here in the house, and I didn't want to leave my wife alone to have to deal with all of them. So I flew up with them on Friday, and I flew back on Saturday. And the services were Friday night and Saturday morning, and I was able to get all that in 24 hours. So we fly up and up and back on American Airlines. And if you live in Miami, you know that American Airlines has a stranglehold, an absolute stranglehold on the gates here at Miami International Airport. So, and the only flight we could get, Thanksgiving weekend, only flight we could get out of Miami into JFK, go up without incident. We're coming back. And I go to the airport. It's immediately after the funeral. I come right from the cemetery. I'm in a suit. I need to change. I'm tired. And I'm just kind of out of it. And I said, look, I'm going to go to the Admiral's Club. I'll get a day pass. That's the American Airlines lounge. I'll get a day pass and I'll pay whatever I have to pay. At least I can change in a clean facility and I can get a drink and there's Wi-Fi there. It's free. It's included. It's, you know, it's fine. So I go and I approach the podium and the woman says, hi, how are you? And I say, I'm great. And she says, really? You're great? This is Concourse B, JFK. And I said, yeah, I'm absolutely great. I'm going home, and I'm thrilled to be going home. So she says, and she types in the computer. She's like, first class to Miami, because I was flying first class. She's like, that doesn't get you in the lounge. I said, I know. I want to buy a day pass. I'm happy to do it. I took out my credit card. She said, nope, no day passes. Lounge is under construction. And I just looked at her. I said, okay. And, I kind of sighed and I put my wallet back in my pocket. And as I turned to walk away, she looked at me and she smirked and she said, I guess you're not great now. And I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked that somebody would say that to me. The experience provided to me as a premium passenger, I paid first class prices for the ticket, and the experience provided to me by American Airlines. And this incident was, in this instance, was awful, just absolutely awful, awful. And this is why I avoid flying American Airlines whenever I can. So the lesson here, the thing that I want to impart on you, the reason that I tell you this story today is because I want you to understand that when you are out there, everything you do from your first point of contact with your client or your prospective client or your referral source, everything you do affects the experience the person with whom you're interacting has with you. Everything you do. So along the way, if you're cold calling, you're breaking down that door, you're kicking in that door, if you call 15 times and you hang up and the caller ID has your name on it or the caller ID has your phone number on it, that person's going to know you're calling 15 times and hanging up. If you're sending 30 emails, that person's going to know you've sent 30 emails. Now, maybe that's what you're going for. Maybe you're going for persistence. That's fine. But if you're pushing your way in, that's the first impression. That's the way you're starting your experience with your customer. The way we do things around here, our system, the 60-second sales system, is about love at first sight for business. It's about how we develop relationships with our prospective clients. So when you go out and you look to initiate that interaction, are you doing so by extending value to that potential client? Or are you doing so with your own best interests in mind and pushing your way in? Think about the experience you're creating. Think about the competitive advantage you want for yourself as a sales professional, as an entrepreneur, as a business leader. The experience you provide is everything. That's your competitive advantage. So when you're selling, if you lead with value, if you lead thinking about the best interest of the other person, you're creating a tremendous competitive advantage that other people will not be able to replicate because the experience you provide is unique to you. I'm going to say that again. The experience you provide to someone else, the experience you provide to your client is unique. No one else can replicate that because you're you. It's a snowflake. Remember that? Everybody that used to say when you were in grammar school, oh, everybody's like a snowflake. No two people are alike, right? Your grammar school teacher used to say that to you. Fine, great. Well, fine. Let's use that then. The experience you provide is like a snowflake. It's like a beautiful, gentle snowflake falling on your eyelashes. Perfect for the wintertime, right? You are providing something unique, something different, and that's your goal. So think about that on your approach when you sell. And now let's think about the unique nature, the snowflake-like nature of selling in a regulated industry. How is that for a clumsy segue? Nancy, do me a favor. Read the marvelously impressive bio of our guest today, and then we can get into a really interesting conversation with one of my favorite people.
So today we have the marvelous Layla Chang. She is the CEO of Florida Dental Benefits, a dental benefits company headquartered in Miami Beach, Florida. Layla started her career in healthcare in 1988, working for a South Florida HMO. Layla has worked in all aspects for the dental benefits industry. Previously, Layla was a founder, investor, and CEO of Atlantic Dental Benefits, a managed dental care company in Florida. During her tenure, Atlantic Dental has returned a significant profit to investors and has grown the organization to more than 700,000 members and 2,000 dentists throughout Florida. Wow. Ms. Chang is a graduate of Florida International University in Miami with a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science.
Layla Chang, welcome to the show.
Hi,
hey, look at that. You like that bell? That's a new addition.
That's awesome.
That ended up, I don't know how that ended up on my desk, but I figured I would ring it just for you. What's happening, Layla? How are you today?
I'm great. I can't wait to get into this.
So 700,000 members, 2,000 yes. dentists. Let me ask you a question, Layla. And this is probably the most pressing question I'm going to ask you, okay? 4 out of 5 dentists surveyed recommend Trident to their patients who chew gum, right? What does the 5th dentist recommend? That's what I want to know. I think you need to go out to your 2,000 dentists, and I need an answer to that question. Will you do that for me?
He recommends not chewing gum. That's what he recommends.
I don't know what's wrong with him. Anyway, a bunch of doctors used to smoke back in the 70s, too. I don't think they're recommending that anymore either. So, Layla, here's what I'd like you to do for us. If you don't mind, please give us you have one of the greatest family stories that I've heard. Will you give us the kind of the 2-minute overview of your background and what brought you here to Miami?
Sure. My dad was Chinese. He was born in Canton, and my mother is Cuban. And my dad made his way to Cuba via the Philippines, and he met my mother and got married and had me. And when my mother was pregnant, my dad actually was able to exile himself in Guantanamo Bay to come to the United States so that he could claim us. And then we came here in 1966.
Wow. All right. Great story. And we are just a few days past a historic event. Those of you who are time shifting and listening to this at a later date, there's no way you can possibly understand the impact on the Cuban community here in Miami as to what happened. Fidel Castro passed away just days ago. Layla, give us a sense for what that event means to the Cuban community and what it means to you personally.
You know, I can't speak for the Cuban community. I can tell you what it means personally. So when my dad came over first, then my mom, my grandparents and I came over shortly after. That's not correct. My dad actually, I didn't meet my dad until I was 2 years old. But we all lived in a little apartment, probably about 500 square feet, all five of us. And my parents, who had worked at businesses in Cuba, had to come here. My mother had to work in a factory making wigs. And my dad had to work as a restaurant worker. And my grandparents, who were, you know, well into their 60s, had to start working as well. My grandmother was a maid for Holiday Inn. And my grandfather worked at the back of, back then it was Le Violines, which was like a cabaret type of show. And he worked the coffee in the back. So my family had to really start from scratch with nothing but what they could carry with them on the Freedom Flight. So it was, you know, it was quite a struggle, but, you know, they made it happen. And, you know, when people start talking about Castro and about, you know, the benefits that he brought to Cuba, it's just difficult when you have firsthand knowledge and firsthand experience of the sacrifices that people had to make to leave the country.
No, I understand. And your family story is one that, you know, it's so important for those of us who have been blessed to be born here in the United States, so those of us who have, you know, who really have this as our birthright, we take it for granted. But these stories, anytime you have the opportunity to hear these stories, or anytime you have the opportunity to hear someone tell a story like this, you need to avail yourself of that opportunity, because it is what makes up the fabric of our country. And you know, stories like your family story remind us of how great this country is, and the opportunity, and what people will do in order to have this kind of opportunity. An opportunity that I, being born here, my kids born here, take for granted every day. We need to hear these stories as often as possible. So thank you. I appreciate you telling us this story. So how did you get to be CEO of Florida Dental Benefits? How did that happen?
So, as I mentioned, I started in healthcare by mistake, actually. As Nancy mentioned, I have a computer science degree. But once I got out of college and started working in computer science, I found that I really hated it. So a friend of mine was working for a local South Florida HMO selling Medicare door-to-door. And she said, "This is a great opportunity. Why don't you come work with us?" So that was my first entree into healthcare, which was going door-to-door and selling Medicare products to the 65 and over community. I liked it. I liked the interaction. I liked being in healthcare. And then an opportunity came up in dental. And it was a better opportunity. I didn't have to go door-to-door. I was working in customer service, and just started, like I said, by mistake, just kind of fell into it and loved the industry. I like dental because it deals with healthcare, but it doesn't deal with all the catastrophic things that happen in medical. So it, like I mentioned, just kind of by mistake. And here I am.
All right. Well, we're glad you're here. So tell us about sales in healthcare, sales in the dental industry. What's the process like, and how difficult is it to sell? You have, you know, an enormous amount of regulations. Give us a quick overview of how tough it is to sell.
Well, you and I have talked about it. The sales cycle in healthcare is incredibly long. Everyone has what we call an open enrollment date. So if you don't speak to the person before their open enrollment date, you have to wait a year. So most companies renew their benefits in January or in October. So if you don't speak to them 3 to 4 months before that date, then you won't have an opportunity in the following year. And you might start a conversation with them, but they might not be up for renewal that year. They might have a 2 or 3 year contract. And so you're speaking to them for 2 or 3 years before you even have an opportunity to quote on their business. So it's really about developing that relationship. Secondly, this kind of business is pretty much controlled by the agent community. An agent will represent several lines of insurance. So they might work with 3 or 4 different carriers, and they're the ones that are presenting the information to the employers to make the decision. So about 90% of the business is controlled by agents.
So
Go ahead. Then the other 10%, as you mentioned before, is controlled through the RFP process, the request for proposal process. And sometimes, and that's mostly larger employers, municipalities, and they normally go out to bid, I would say, every 3 to 5 years.
All right. So talk about the relationships. Who do you have to develop relationships with, and how do you have your sales team develop relationships?
There's 3 ways that we develop relationships. The first way is we develop relationships with the agent community. So an agent will control multiple employers. So it's a great way if you get a good relationship with an agent, he'll quote you on multiple accounts. And so with dealing with one person, you can have access to a multitude of employers. That's the best way. Secondly, is you can develop a relationship with the business, and then they might have an agent that they work with, and then they can introduce you to the agent and you can get in that way. And the third way is the RFP process, which is normally done through a purchasing department. But if you wait to speak to someone, if you wait to present right before the RFP process, it doesn't work. You have to develop the relationships way before the RFP is ever written or the RFP is ever sent out.
So if you have a good relationship with the purchasing people, when the RFP process comes around, you have the opportunity to really shape the RFP, right? You can help shape the requirements and help them with crafting the way the RFP is worded. Am I correct in that?
Exactly. And it also helps to, you know, sometimes they might not realize that the way that they're writing the RFP limits the people that can respond to it. So it's important to have them understand that if they write it a certain way, only the top three largest carriers will be able to respond. And so they're leaving out the local carriers. So it's important to have that conversation with them ahead of time. Again, if you're waiting till the RFP is written, it's you're never going to have an opportunity.
What's the farthest out you've developed relationships? Like, in other words, so how long have you waited for relationships to pay off for you?
The longest sales cycle, I would say, is 3 years.
So you develop the relationship, and then you mm-hmm. wait and you wait and you wait, and 3 years later, all of a sudden, you know, 100,000 people jump on board.
Exactly. That was ours. Was we had 40,000 members, but it took 3 years, and this was over a relationship that I had previously. So I've known this person for, I would say, 10 to 15 years, but they were very happy with their current carrier, and we just kept the conversation going. I'd check in with them every 3 to 4 months to see how they were doing, and when they were actually thinking about going out to bid, we spoke. I responded to it, and then we had follow-up meetings, and we were able to get the business 3 years later.
So how do you initiate? You said there's 3 groups, right? How do you initiate new relationships with? Let's start with companies. In fact, let's just focus on companies, because companies, agents, and, you know, RFP process. RFP process. If you're listening and you're interested in learning how to develop business through an RFP process, there's a ton of information on the website. I think I've done a couple of videos. We even might have done a podcast on it. That's out there. I want to know about companies. So tell us how, Layla, you initiate a relationship with a company, knowing that it could take 3 years.
Mm-hmm. So for example, I was just calling someone today from automotive part company that has probably 200 to 300 employees. So it's about getting in, finding out who their HR person is. So it's about making cold calls, finding out who the right person to speak with. And then I use LinkedIn a lot. I use LinkedIn to see if there are connections that I can get to get us to get an introduction to that person. And then it's just about speaking to them sending emails, following up until I am able to get information on who they have currently, what's their effective date, so that I can put them in my tickler file and reach out to them 6 months before their effective date.
All right, so give me a LinkedIn success story if you can think of one. How have you used LinkedIn to research and connect through to somebody?
Well, one of the big home runs for us is when we are able to get an HMO. So a medical HMO will offer dental. And most of the times when they're offering dental, it's not them offering dental. They outsource it. So they would outsource it to someone like us, like Florida Dental Benefits. I actually was prospecting on LinkedIn, and there was the contact person on there, which was the director of provider relations. I saw there was a connection with someone specifically from BNI, a business networking group that I'm part of. And I was able to contact that person and say, do you know this person? Could you recommend that they speak with me? And that opened, it took about 3 months out of the sales cycle, or at least the contact cycle, because it was a warm introduction.
So you went on LinkedIn and you saw the person you wanted to target, and then you looked through and saw who was connected, who's a mutual connection, connected to
yes.
you, connected to them, and you
Correct.
Noticed that this person who was in a business networking group with you was also connected to both people. So you went to that person, you said, hey, I can provide significant value. Can you make an introduction to me? Here's what I'd like to do for them. And they introduced you, and they gave you a shortcut to the sales cycle by like 3 months.
About 3 months, exactly. Awesome. And I think it's important to say it's you have to really, because as you know, with LinkedIn, you might be connected with someone and they don't know you. So it's really important to take that step to find out if that person knows them versus calling them and say, oh, we know, we have a common connection. That doesn't work. So it's really about doing your homework and reaching out to that person, that middle person, to make sure that they have a good relationship with the person you're trying to contact.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I find that LinkedIn, basically LinkedIn is a trail of breadcrumbs that leads you home. It's not
Correct.
The actual, it's not a map, it's not the actual path. It's clues, it's hints.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do with LinkedIn is I use it to figure out who the exact person is. I mean, sure, if I have a first degree connection, I call them up and I say, hey, do you know this guy? And what I found is 9 times out of 10, they don't know them, and it's just somebody who, you know, spammed them and they clicked on yes, or somebody who they spammed and that person clicked yes, I'll accept your connection. But it gives you a frame of reference. It gives you a place to start. And the beauty of LinkedIn, you can upgrade your membership, but it's free. I mean, you can connect to all these people for free and see who people know. So it's a great resource tool. Speaking of which, what other resource tools do you and your team use to find out who the ideal person is in a company?
It's really just trial and error. For us, the people that make the decisions are usually the CEO, an HR director, or a purchasing director, depending on how large the company is. So really, those are the three people that we're targeting. And most of the times when you call, you're able to get that information, and those people are open to speaking with you or providing you the information, and most of them will refer you to the agent that they're working with.
Okay. Great. All right. We have just a couple of minutes left. So I want to ask you if you can remember the biggest success story you've had in sales, the thing that you're most proud of in sales and selling. Tell us that story if you can think of it.
You know, I think every time you close a deal is a success story. You know, as long as I've been in business, it always surprises me. How successful you can be if you just keep at it. And you talked about persistency, and there, you're right. There's a fine line between persistency and being annoying. So it's about it always surprises me if you're persistent and you are professional and you're providing something of value. Eventually, you're going to get an opportunity. I think you were the one that said to me something about sales. You don't end the sale. What was that? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. The client doesn't decide when the sales process ends. You decide.
You
when
do.
The sales
that's
process ends.
That's one of my favorite things. I read that all the time.
Yeah, that's the thing. The sales process is over when you decide it's over. So If the client isn't interested today, you simply haven't shown them enough value or the right value. So what you need to do is you need to figure out what problems they're having and how you can solve them. And until you figure that out, you need to just keep coming back and asking them. Now, here's the thing. If you do that in a way that is non-threatening and that is focused on them and benefiting them, few people will ever say, no, thank you, I don't want help, I'm not interested in you doing something great for me. So, you know, an example that I give people all the time is, you know, I'll regularly talk to people and I'll say, what's the biggest issue you're having right now? If you could wave a magic wand and solve one problem, what would that be? And then, you know, if it's a problem, for example, with me, if it's a problem with financing, I don't have anything to do with finance. I help people with business strategy, productivity improvement. I can help you with a merger and acquisition. I can help you sell more stuff, but finance is not my thing. However, I know a lot of bankers and I know a lot of people who can do some creative financing with really, really good results. So somebody says to me, I'm having trouble. I have to purchase heavy equipment to buy a block of homes. And if I can't get this equipment, I'm going to be up a creek because I'm not going to be able to build this new development. Well, it turns out not only do I know somebody at Wells Fargo who does that kind of financing, but I also know a couple of people who will do financing short term for you because you want to get started tomorrow. I got a guy who can get you the money tomorrow as long as you have a path to getting longer term financing. That has nothing to do with me. I don't have anything to do with that other than making the connection. But what does that do? It furthers the relationship. So when that person says to me, gosh, Dave, I can't thank you enough. You saved my business. I'm now going to be up 30%, 40% for the year. Thank you so much. I look at the person and I say, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. I know you'd do the same for me, right? And they say, of course. Well, when you're ready to sell those homes that you're building on that lot, I want you to give me a call. I'm going to help your team sell them faster than you sold out your last development. That's how you handle providing value and developing relationships based on value. The sales cycle may be 3 years, but the investment you make today will pay off down the road. And that, my friends, is the big takeaway that we get from my good friend, Layla Chang. Layla, I thank you so much for joining us on the 60 Second Sales Show today. All of our guests here on the 60 Second Sales, this is my game show, Bob. Portion of the show, by the way, now, Layla. All of our guests here on the 60 Second Sales Show receive two fabulous parting gifts. They receive the book Obsessed by Grant Cardone, and they receive Million Dollar Maverick by my mentor, Alan Weiss. I am going nuts with the bell that I found on my desk today. Layla, thank you so much. Thanks, as always, to the wonderful and talented Nancy Pop for being our producer. That'll wrap up our show for this week, and remember, if it is, well, I don't know. This show may not be on Wednesdays anymore, but if you're listening to this show, it's the 60 Second Sales Show. I can't even speak. If you're listening to the show, it's the 60 Second Sales Show, and I am Dave Lorenzo. Until next time, here's hoping you make a great living and live a great life.
That'll do it for this week's episode of the 60 Second Sales Show. Reach out to me with your questions, comments, and feedback on Facebook at The Dave Lorenzo, Twitter at The Dave Lorenzo, Instagram at The Dave Lorenzo. Walking down the street, just yell at me, hey, that's The Dave Lorenzo. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you make a great living and live a great life. Until next time, bye-bye.